We're now recording. And Marianne, are you there? Nope.
I'm going to step away just for a second to grab a can of seltzer.
Sure. Jonathan, nice to see you.
It's good to see you too. It's good to see
Yeah.
you too. It was great, wonderful to chat the other day and catch up.
Yeah, we need to have, spend more time catching up. And maybe I'll call you after this program.
I would love that.
Good. Marianne, are you on?
Left
She
two.
was with us just now, so.
The
There I
here she
am.
comes.
Yeah, it's something got a little bit stuck. I'm not in good sync, but I'll do it not in good sync. So everybody, welcome back. And I'm going to introduce our case writers, who are Jonathan Brill and Larry Stibel. And Jonathan Brill was global futurist and research director at Hewlett Packard. Jonathan is the author of Rogue Waves, Rogue Waves, and maybe we could put that in the chat, Larry. Future-proof your business to survive and profit from radical change. He is a member of the board of directors of Frost & Sullivan, a global market intelligence firm. Jonathan's clients include Hewlett Packard, JP Morgan, Samsung, LG, Microsoft, Verizon, Korn Ferry, the MIT Media Lab, and the US government. Larry Stibel is co-founder of BoardOptions.com, whose mission is to work with nominating and governance committees in three areas: board talent, board education, and board CEO communications improvement. Larry is a former board member of the New England chapter of the National Association of Corporate Directors and has served on the board of a venture-backed software as a service company. So I'm going to turn it over to Larry, or do you want, oh, you want to ask me to ask the groups? You want me to ask the groups, and then Larry and Jonathan will comment on the case. So group one was the group I was in with Craig James, Craig Sanders, Linda, and myself. And Craig James is going to do the reporting. So take it away, Craig.
Okay, thank you, Marianne. So I'm going to start with what we all have what thought was a consensus that number one, that really the whole board should be taking responsibility for this cybersecurity. In the short term, we thought it would be wise for them to expand the audit committee charter to include oversight, including cyber, but more broadly, just risk in general. In the medium term, to retain a cybersecurity firm and have them come in and do a baseline audit to see where things are and where they need to be. And then longer term, to recruit an independent director that has experience in risk more broadly and hopefully ideally in cyber. We also thought it would be wise, if they haven't already done so, to engage a crisis communication firm in case something does happen that requires their services, and they aren't running around looking for one after the fact. We don't know if they have any cyber insurance in place. If they don't, they need to get it. And we also thought that just risk management in general is at $120 million company really ought to be a core function right up there with marketing and finance and operations. Particularly these days with all the cyber risks that we've seen. One of us was, shall I say, aghast that the CEO admitted that we don't do this because we're working too much day to day. That's not what a CEO is supposed to be doing. One of the other members of our team did want to give her a little bit of slack because we are in a family business situation and third or fourth generation, I forget what it is, probably doesn't have access to the kind of people that we all have here But nevertheless, we thought that that looking at it once or twice a year wasn't going to cut it. So again, to summarize things, we think that there should be, at least in the mid to long term, an executive, call it a CISO or a head of IT, whose mandate includes cyber, and on the board to make sure the audit committee does address that and expands the oversight. Team, what did I miss? Greg?
I think Mary captured it.
Yeah, I think you did a good job too. The only thing, just to reiterate that, management owns risk and the board owns oversight. So just to reiterate that.
Good, thank you. Group two is Ari, John, I'm not sure which John, but that will John will speak up, Ken and Robert. So who is the spokesman for group two?
That's me, John Tober.
Okay, hi, John.
Thank you. We have some similar approaches that Craig just thrown out, but what we had a consensus after looking at this is that we thought that we would form a risk committee initially on the audit committee, a subcommittee of the audit committee, which would be a risk committee. Initially, we would at least place that place on the risk committee one board member who has some modicum of experience with cyber through a seminar, at least for now, all right, and possibly another. What we would do is that committee would be mandated to bring in the firm's accountants who conduct their independent audit to do an overall assessment of the risks that exist within the company. One of them being cyber, which is already pointed out, but there are other risks that exist. Some of that information might appear already in their management letter that they're receiving from their auditors on an annual basis. And if not, it would be a special project because there's no one really in the company that has the kind of expertise to know who really to hire, who's the best, who do we want to bring in, and where are all the soft spots as far as cyber, other types of risks, within the business. So once that we have our risk committee and we bring in our auditors, let them come in. Most audit firms of even a small size can do that type of assessment, all right? And then come back and make a recommendation to us as where do we see our risks actually lie? And in this particular case, we felt the cyber risk is one that we should address immediately, all right? Because it does pose a real risk. We don't have enough information as to what other risks that might exist in the company until our auditors take a look at it, because no one seems to have that expertise. I think that goes to your point, Greg, is bringing an independent director with a little expertise here. That doesn't exist yet. But I think that might be a step after we got some information back from our auditors as to where the risks lie. And so I think that's basically what we would do right now. I think the audit committee needs to have to make sure its charter gives the audit committee the power of the purse to pursue experts in order to do their jobs. And we don't know that, but we'd want to make sure they do that. So it should be that committee that hires the expert if any experts need to come in, and that oversight should lie within the risk committee once we know where the risks are. So basically that kind of puts it all in a nutshell, how we would initially address it. And then we had a couple comments about the board member that feels overworked. And that may be a spot for the independent director. Anyways, anyways, that's the way we addressed it right now, is we don't know. There's no one with expertise that knows anything about assessing risk. And I think the just recap, the best way to look to is look to our CPAs. Hopefully it's a firm that can do it. If it's not, we would bring one in. The audit committee would bring one in. And I think that's how we would address the problem.
Thank you, John. Does anyone else on the team want to say anything or add anything?
No, the only other thing I would say is we came to our conclusion based on the facts of the case. It's a small company. I mean, clearly larger companies, publicly traded companies, would have much more responsibility for a specific risk alone committee outside of the audit committee. But if the audit committee exists, has a charter, It's a good place to vest it so that it's a small enough group where something gets done and not the whole board. So.
Thank you. Group number three is Anil, Ingrid, Jonathan, and Robert. Who's your reporter?
That would be me. Yeah. Hi, everyone. This is apparently this is initiation. Apparently, in the group, as if you're new, you get to present. So here we go.
Share the pain. Share the pain.
They just told the you that. They
exactly.
Told you that.
no. I think there was a lot of common themes that we've already heard as part of our discussion. I think one of the things that we leaned into is we would really want to get a better understanding on what the company's knowledge on risk is, what has been done. So ask some key questions to just identify, have they identified any risks? Have they dealt with any risks they have identified? As well as get a better understanding on what is the expertise on the board as it relates to the different risks, whether it's the enterprise risk or the cybersecurity risk. And then based on that knowledge, bring in an external firm to do overall risk assessment of the organization, and then come up with a mitigation plan that could be reported back to both management and the audit and the full board, where steps can be taken to address some of those risks. We did play around with and do this in a fast pace, not wait 3 years to get it done. I think Ingrid specifically noted there has to be a bit of an urgency, especially as it relates to the cybersecurity. And once we get that mitigation plan, then prioritize, and cybersecurity might be that first step on what do we do and accomplish to mitigate those risks, but then also work through the overall enterprise risk management. We did have a sense of, doesn't seem like they've looked at risk as a whole. Also concerns about the fact that it isn't part of their day-to-day operations, but acknowledging it's obviously a smaller organization. But also saying that the whole board needs to look at this. It can't just be one or two individuals. But please, the rest of my group, please jump in if I missed anything.
Anyone? Oh, okay, great. Thank you. Group four is George, John, the old John, Stephen, and Mitchell. Who is your spokesperson?
That's me, Mitchell. Look, most of what has been said already, I think we all spotted as issues and places where changes need to be made. Just a couple, therefore, higher altitude observations. First of all, there are five private equity partners on this board. In the normal course, that just doesn't make sense. And maybe that's why there's a claim by the chair, senior private equity partner, that the board is just too busy now. And if we were to address the situation at the board level, we'd have to hire one or two more directors. And I'm not sure, he's not sure his or her, I guess it's his, Fred, partners will be in favor of that. I would think that they could potentially change the makeup of the board, and there'd be capacity for people who have the time and maybe have certain core competencies other than simply being partners at the PE level. And then stepping back, everyone recognizes, I think, that the cybersecurity is a management responsibility and function. And of course, the board's role is oversight of management's cybersecurity, specifically in risk management processes and expertise. In the first instance, whether the oversight, so the company needs to address that, and clearly the CEO is saying everybody's too busy to focus on cybersecurity, that's not the right answer, and that has to be addressed. And it has to be, the board has to require management to address that lack of expertise in the first instance. At the board level, where the oversight sits, ultimately, of course, it's in the full board. Depending upon the board size, level of expertise, etc., that could be delegated to an audit committee, the risk committee, or specifically a cybersecurity committee. This board and this company may be too small for that, but either the audit or a risk committee, and then reporting, of course, to the full board. There was discussion about whether you bring on a cybersecurity expert to specifically to the board. That in our group, we had both opinions that, you know, generalists who are smart, bright, experienced people who have are lifelong learners, generalists can be of real value. As opposed to specifically a cybersecurity expert, where that expertise might eventually start to become dated if they're board members in cybersecurity and not always and maybe not also acting as third party experts in an operational role somewhere else. So there was discussion about whether the board should have a siloed expert or generalist, but certainly, if you have don't have a cyber board member, and maybe even if you do, you do bring in your audit firm or an outside cybersecurity expert to educate this board on the basics of cybersecurity and the risks, and therefore put in at least a fundamental understanding of cybersecurity, and then potentially periodically, maybe annually, come in and do an assessment of the company's cybersecurity and report to the board. The board should be aware of SEC requirements. Even though this is a privately held company, it's good to at least look and understand best practices. And I think we all know about SEC required disclosure for cybersecurity. We know about case law where company and individual chief technology officer has been held liable because they said they were doing cybersecurity in an acceptable way, and in fact, we're not doing that. Insurance is high. That's SolarWinds. Insurance is highly appropriate cybersecurity, not only for the company's own operations, but in the event that there are damages resulting from cybersecurity attacks to vendors and customers. I think that pretty much covers what we thought. But the bottom line is this company. I think the CEO used the term board malpractice. I wouldn't want to see that in writing or in a text message. But for a board not to be aware, mm-hmm. and for management and CEO not to be fully focused in place already on cybersecurity, the exposure, the liability is astronomical. Did I miss something, guys?
Nope. That's good.
Good, great. Thank you, Mitchell. So now I'm going to turn the conversation over to find out from Larry and Jonathan if this is a real case or what their concerns were when they put the case together and then their reactions to what our board members have brought forth.
Jonathan, why don't you go first?
You're muted, Jonathan. Can you unmute yourself?
Larry and I have had conversations over the years, and so this is going to be fun. There are going to be some sparks here. So I think we disagree about where boards should keep their noses in and their fingers out. when I talk to small, medium manufacturing firms, large manufacturing firms as part of a big one, one of the biggest, what I've discovered is they make stuff. Their supply chain operations, they're trading. They get stuff done, and they aren't necessarily.
Excuse me, would you, if you're not speaking, please mute your microphone.
Mute our microphones.
What I've discovered is they're really good at doing that, and they're really good at running the company. Often organizations have trouble with new risk and with multivariate risk. When I talk to manufacturing organizations, and they understand the supply chain risk of China, they understand the cyber risk, they understand this, they understand that, they understand capital risk. But what always happens when things go bad, right? When you have a rogue wave, when multiple things kind of happen at the same time, get out of control, is that it's not one challenge, it's not one disruption that hits you, it's all of them all at once. And what I think organizations have trouble with at the managerial level is thinking about, okay, what happens when my finances, my operations, my external environment, my strategy are all hit at the same time by multiple things? You know, you have a pandemic. Pandemic causes a supply chain shock. That causes a capital shock. That causes all the stuff down the road, all completely knowable if you've been through this before. The problem is that very few people alive, right, and no one in the working age had been through this before. But if you look at history, you can kind of have a pretty good picture of what's going on. My point being that when we take a look at these larger events, right, and they bring up this idea of multivariate risk and or multiple risks that we aren't tracking in the thing, I do wonder whether that is solely management's responsibility to track, because you're asking them really to pay out, you know, on the 1 to 3 year time frame typically, not the 5 to 10 year time frame. And yet that's the time frame in which you can pivot to deal with strategic risk. And so I have like those two perspectives on it. I obviously, you know, the sales pitch of you need an independent director, an independent advisor, like, yeah, I like that pitch. Good for me. But I do wonder whether it's a competency we need to be building in across our boards outside of financial services, where we do have risk is required in many cases at the board level. So that's kind of my thought about kind of how to look at this and how to think about this. I think you do need to tell the CEO, hey, kind of you got to be thinking about the strategic stuff. But the reality is that you probably don't have a CEO that's trained, compensated, or has an aptitude to do it in this type of business.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'll go next. You know, I don't think Jonathan and I are really have a big disagreement. First, I want to agree with Mitchell. I think his group really focused on what I thought was a really critical issue. There's too many private equity partners on this board, because often the private equity partners, they look at the world in the same way. They know how to read Excel spreadsheets. They have a focus. There's not enough diversity on the board in terms of different perspectives. So if they can reduce the number of partners on the board, that frees space to bring in people with different perspectives. So I totally agree with Mitchell. I want to just with res- I had I have two other thoughts about the case, and one has to do with cybersecurity. I agree with everybody. You know, just it's management's responsibility. There should be a committee. Could be the audit committee involved in it. There should be a consulting firm consulting that committee. I totally agree with that. Period. New paragraph. When I was going to elementary school, there was always a danger that there was going to be a nuclear war. And every once in a while in elementary school, we would have these drills where we would have to pretend there was a nuclear war going on, and we would have to hide under our desks with our ass facing the window and our heads facing away from the window as much as possible, which seemed like just such a stupid exercise to do. On the other hand, now that I reflect back on it, what the school was trying to do was to take something about explicit knowledge about what to do in a crisis like a global war and turn it into implicit knowledge. That is, you don't have to think about it, you just do it. Same thing with fire drills. Every once in a while, a company or school will have a fire drill where people have to walk down the stairs, go out at a certain place, stand outside the building, and then they go back in. The idea is once you do it a few times, It's no longer explicit knowledge, it's implicit knowledge. And I remember a CPA consultant came and gave a talk about cybersecurity, and he said something I never forgot. He says, there's only two kinds of companies, those who've had a cybersecurity attack and those who will have a cybersecurity attack. And the ones who will are probably going to be the small to mid-sized firms that don't have the kind of sophisticated technology. And so one of the things I would, if I was a board member, I would certainly insist on is let's go through a fire drill and assume there has been a cybersecurity attack. What would we say? What would we do? Who would we talk with? What would the press release look like? And that would help us understand where our defects are, where we need to, maybe we don't need to hire a press, a PR firm now, but we need to have one in our Rolodex so that when it happens or if it happens, we can immediately go to that. So I would go through like a cybersecurity fire drill maybe once every year or once every 2 years. I want to return to something that bothered several people in this group, and that is everybody's too busy. I mean, yeah, everybody's too busy. The analogy that I would use is when you're driving your car at 40 miles an hour, you have the ability to not only look at the road, but you can look at what's on the side of the road as well. When you're driving your car 95 miles an hour, peripheral vision tends to decrease, and you just look at what's directly in front of you. And that's one of the things that I see with this company, and that is because it's a private equity-dominated company, because there's an exit they want to achieve in a couple of years, the CEO is driving this bus as fast as he can to raise income. Fine. That means when you're driving 95 miles an hour, you're really focusing on what's right in front of you. And you become relatively blind to the threats and opportunities on the side. The example that I always use is BlackBerry. BlackBerry was the business portable computer. It was the standard. And I had a client company called Nokia, which was in Finland, and they focused on BlackBerry as their competitor. And they were so focused on BlackBerry. And there was this company on the side called Apple that was, you know, its niche was the creative types, and we're the business types, so we don't have to worry about Apple. Well, we all know how the story ends. And what happened to BlackBerry and what happened to Nokia as well? They're not in that business anymore. My point is, when you're driving the bus at 95 miles an hour, and that's the case with most private equity portfolio companies, I always recommend have one day or one half day every year where the board and the C-suite get together. And the only item on the agenda, let's focus on the periphery. Let's not focus on the threats and opportunities in front of us. Focus on the threats and opportunities that are the side of us. And let's look at those. Because ultimately, like Nokia, that can be your undoing, not what you think is the threat in front of you. So that's where I think this company is missing an opportunity. I'll just shut up now. And anybody have any thoughts, perspectives?
Could I add just a little bit to that?
Please, please, Jonathan. So
we did a study of the largest privately or publicly held companies in the United States in the year that COVID hit. And what we discovered was that of the top 10, 80% failed to identify pandemics as a material risk. Of the two that did, CVS Aetna is a health insurance company. They kind of had to. And Apple said, hey, it might screw up our manufacturing a little bit. but didn't really think about the secondary impacts, right? What happens when everybody needs to buy a computer on the same day because there's a pandemic? What happens when all our retail stores are shut down? What happens when our supply chain into market is shut down? And so what often happens, even in the best companies, right, is people focus on the thing they know. They've experienced a supply chain, you know, a manufacturing breakdown, as opposed to the thing that can happen. And we need to think about that bigger picture. Carnival Cruise Lines, really familiar with epidemics on their ships. That was in their 10K. Pandemic? What happens if it happens outside their ships? Not on their 10K, but when we were at HP, we were looking at this as probably a 12% likelihood of happening in 2020. It's just that no one was looking. And so what are those things that are highly likely that haven't happened before that you aren't paying attention to? Like Larry was saying, if you haven't had a cyber attack, you're gonna. And if you defend yourself a little bit, eventually this will be a state level issue, right? And your little IT consultancy in the corner ain't going to be able to protect you from it. And so what are those things that are going to happen in the next 5 years? Highly likely to happen. And yet, we're not even looking.
Ingrid? Ingrid,
I was going to just say, I really think it's important to also put some sort of emphasis on educating your board on that topic of cybersecurity, and mostly because what I found is many times within the company, the management group, they are highly responsive to board requests because they feel there's the board wants it. So people start running around doing stuff, which is good. But I think that it's important for us to have, if the board members have at least some basic knowledge in the space, they know what to ask for, what to expect, what's kind of like standard practice versus best practice. And I feel like in the having management, you know, do what they need to do, as in, you know, put together a report or some findings and whatnot, that's important. But if the board is on a receptive end with little to no knowledge, it's like, oh, great, they've quote unquote told us. And believe me, many people that are presenting to the board are going to pick the sunniest, happiest, even the negative side. They're going to present what's going to make, hopefully, be a low-cost solution or, hey, we've got it handled kind of an approach. And I think that it's important to understand the board needs to have enough sophistication and knowledge in the space, be able to press harder to ensure that they have done their quote-unquote fiduciary responsibility. Because if something happens, someone later will say, well, how come you guys didn't ask this? How come you didn't ask that? And that, to me, leaves a vulnerability for the board members that I certainly wouldn't put it at the malpractice level, but it certainly would be a smash your head kind of a moment that you should have been asking those questions, and shame on you for not reading up more on this topic to be able to get you prepared. And I'm not saying you have to be an expert by any means, but you should have a notional knowledge to be able to discern whether you're being, you know, snowed or not by what's being told to you. So just my two cents.
Hey, Ingrid, I totally agree with you. And indeed, one of the things I always say to boards is, who's the chief learning officer in the board of directors? And if there is no chief learning officer, then by default, the chief learning officer for the board of directors is the CEO. And given the fact that you also hire and fire the CEO, do you see anything wrong with that picture? And it's the role of the nominating and governance committee to think about, what do we as a board need to know so that we can ask intelligent questions? That's where the responsibility is. And there needs to be some sort of mechanism to put down, what do we need to know? And then maybe hire a consulting firm or a person or to maybe go in and just do some research on AI in AI, just to find out what are some of the key issues that we're not focusing on that maybe we should be focusing on. doesn't have to be that expensive or time consuming, but you shouldn't depend on the CEO to be telling you where we are. George, you have a reaction? George Gorman? Hello, George.
I was just gonna add to what Ingrid was saying and something I mentioned in our smaller group discussion, not about cybersecurity, but a year ago, the board that I'm on, a large mutual fund company, we decided to have a offsite education session on AI, and specifically the charge to the consulting firm that we hired was, we don't need you to tell us what AI is or what it can do, because the management company can do that. We want to talk, have a directed discussion, talk about what is the board's role in overseeing AI in our situation. And so it's the first time we've done something like this, and it was about 5 hours. It was offsite. It was just the board, which is 100% independent directors, nobody from management were there. They weren't presenting. And then the consultants who stayed, and we had a dinner. So we had sort of informal discussion afterwards. And that was just to kind of get us up to speed with, what's our job here? So just different approach, or not different, but something similar to what Ingrid was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else want to have any comments about this case?
I think I do, in that, my background is in healthcare, and one of the things in healthcare is that you constantly think about what could possibly go wrong and you practice it. And again, as Larry was saying, like dodging under the desk, it's not only that. Once you've tried it a few times, at least you know where to begin and where to start. But you have to think about what are the real possibilities, and then how would we react quickly to those. So I think it's a good exercise for people on the board as board members to think about what are the areas in our business. What's our business mix? Where are we getting our clients from if things are changing? Where can we have reputational risk? All of the things that you don't ordinarily think of. I think we think of financial risk, and more we have to think about cybersecurity risk because it's in front of us. But just the whole exercise of thinking about all the what-if scenarios and what would we possibly do in those situations. There was a fire in an assisted living facility in Massachusetts, and they hadn't had fire drills because the assisted living is not supposed to be for people who require a lot of care. So but they were supposed to have fire drills and they never did them. But if you do them, then at least you know, and people know what to expect, and people just put their shoes on and walk out the door, and it just becomes second nature. And I think we have to do that as board members for all of the kinds of risks that our businesses can face.
Yeah, the worst time to ask for where's the fire extinguisher is when you need to know where it is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. John Ela raised his hand. John?
Thanks, Larry. I was going to say some comments similar to what Mary Ann just said about the importance of looking for it. I was going to talk a little bit more about the why of it, that it, this is something that's always been important, to be looking at where things are coming from, what's potential risks out there. Jonathan's book is very good. I'd encourage everybody to read it if you haven't. But everything is changing so fast. The pace of change, be it technology, how quickly AI has come on, Bitcoin, all sorts of, economic trends, tariff trends, the whole chaotic political situation we're in. The rate of change is so fast that we can't just catch up with it anymore. We have to be anticipating it. And I think that idea of having a, a half day risk assessment, what's out there, what's on the periphery, is more important now than it's ever been. And it's just going to get faster.
So John, so we've chatted off and on about this. You've read chapter 2 of my book. We covered many of the causes of what's happening now. And yet it was really hard to imagine, right? I wasn't able to fully imagine it. I mean, I was doing analysis of AI and its impact on tasks 2018 and 2019, and they were dead on. I still wasn't able to imagine it. So I think there are these two sides of this, right? One, like, doing a risk day is like a party favor. I think kind of it gives you a false sense of security, you know, like let's spend 2 hours on risk as opposed to have this be a part of the way we work, which is most companies don't do that. Companies like Shell, they do it. It's really interesting how they work. You think about them as a very conservative company, and yet they do the most extreme stuff on Earth, right? Like putting oil drilling stations in the middle of the North Sea and 50-year investment cycles. This is insane what they do. But the risk and risk management is such a central part of how they work. It allows them to do this stuff, and it makes them look like a very conservative company when they're very much the opposite. The other thing that strikes me when I do like scenario planning exercises, like, because I do these half day things, right, is that what always happens is that people get super focused on the bogeyman, right? AI super intelligence is going to happen tomorrow, and there's going to be the third world war and like all of this stuff, and everyone gets rotated on that risk, and it all might happen, you know, could happen, but no one is really focused on what happens if we fail to automate the boring, simple, stupid stuff that we don't want to do that we have technology for today. And so I think we need to focus on both of these things. And my point is, I think it's a process. I think it's a practice as opposed to an activity. And how do we balance that with, you know, the realities of we're on boards, we're part-timers, you know, how do we build this into what we do? How do we encourage a highly efficiency focused, growth focused management team on the stuff that looks like conservative and slowing things down and all that stuff too? And it's a challenge I haven't quite answered, but I'm curious about it.
And it's particularly an acute issue in a private equity dominated portfolio company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I don't think we're going to solve this issue, but we brought some of the dilemmas to light. And again, I want to thank you very much, Jonathan, for the case and for your perspectives. Definitely. Rogue Waves is the name of the book. I would encourage you to get it. You know, I think when I first read it, it looked like, oh yeah, that could happen. And then COVID happened and the rest of the world happened. And now it's, oh yeah, we're in it right now. We will not be meeting next month, but we will be meeting in September. We look forward to it. And hope you have a wonderful summer, everybody. Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Larry. Thanks, Marianne.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.